It's a really interesting question. How to find out if we will actually come back to where we are originally from, or we are destined to stay here forever?
I have a question in relation to this. Actually.
Go right ahead.
And I had it even before, that previously we knew the spiritual process as coming back to somewhere, as that we should ascend to some destination, and this material world is useless, we should abandon it as soon as possible. But now we hear from some sources that the spiritual process is, and the kingdom of God is going to be here on earth. So is it a major difference, and how the process changes in relation to this?
You're going to have to translate yourself. Don't forget that when you're translating, you have to translate on the broadcast, so it has to be the same volume as the other.
Okay.
What do you think?
What do I think?
Yeah.
I think it's quite possible, but maybe it's because humanity makes a major transformation now. They are much more spiritual evolved, or is this some plan of God? I don't know. To make a kingdom of God on earth.
Would it make a difference to you?
No, it wouldn't. It's just about to be aware of what is actually going on. That many says the older process is useless, to abandon this place, to quit it as soon as possible, and we should do something here, something spiritual.
What do you think is, because to be quite honest, I'm not going to give you any absolute answer. I'm just curious about the psychology of man that makes us feel that what we want is somewhere else. Do you think that's related? Like, for example, when I think, I mean personally, about some place where everything is wonderful. You know, funny thing is I had a dream of that last night. I just remembered it. It just came to me just now. I'll try to remember it more. In this dream, which seemed so real, there was a group of people, a large group of people. In fact, it was all of you that I normally see, and those who perhaps I don't see but I know are there. All were sitting in a very big kind of a room setting, in chairs, in rows, when I was looking at you. And I just had mentioned something and somebody started speaking. And then another person was speaking, and the amazing thing was there was no conflict. There was no disturbing energy between any person in the room. And everybody realized it all of a sudden. And they started looking at each other. And they said to each other, there's no anxiety in what we're doing. And they started talking to each other freely and openly and relating. Actually, it was all of you relating and feeling together and work and just communicating together, being together. And it was just such a nice thing because there was no friction in any of these relationships. Yet it was in an atmosphere just like right now. And it's quite interesting that I feel that this is practically what I was seeing last night in this. I don't really want to call it a dream because I felt the experience too. So it was more like a vision, more like a vision. And it's very interesting that the first topic we talk about is this. And it just made me remember that, which I had forgotten. We can analyze for a second this, and we can talk about how the mechanism of being free from fear or anxiety or friction operates. But I think there's a very deep meaning behind that. I mean, what would you conclude, Maha, would be the underlying reason why we get into these anxiety-filled situations? If you are listening in Winamp, you have to listen in stereo right now because there's a lot of discussion on the other channel. I'm sorry, I can't repeat everything. I felt the same way. I felt that we create this situation where we have this anxiety. We create it. And you went even a step further by saying that we all have different reasons for creating our anxiety. I've been in situations, and I'm sure you have too, where you're in a group of people where everything's very nice, it's flowing, it's very comfortable, and then somebody enters into it who's not tuned to that comfort and that feeling and creates an agitating energy that ruins everything. Even if there's a lot of people, it just takes one person to do it. I would suppose if one had the possibility to do so, there could be a group of people who would not want those persons to enter into their group. Let's say, for example, even Lord Chaitanya's time when he was chanting at Srivast Thakur's house, he would not allow into that chanting anyone who would disturb the mood in any way. Now just consider that. I'm going to change the screen here because I'm getting a neck ache here. Just consider that. That's a very interesting point. You've got a situation where there is this incredible Vaikuntha atmosphere in Lord Chaitanya's chanting. He's just having such a good time chanting, and it's just really a no anxiety, pure Vaikuntha kind of a thing. And it can be destroyed by one person coming into it. So right here on this planet, this was created at that time. I think that is a very specifically important point, because the question is that do you have to go somewhere to get this, or can it be here? And that example of what happened at Lord Chaitanya's time, not only when Lord Chaitanya was there, but even after he departed, when others who had a similar spiritual mentality got together, they reproduced that atmosphere. We have also done that in our association, and that's probably the significance of what I was seeing last night. So at least we can conclude you don't have to go somewhere to get it. In other words, you can get it here. It is possible. At least we can conclude that. Now that's no small point. That is one monstrously important point. Why, Maha, do you think that's an important point?
Why I think it's an important point?
Do you think it's important?
Of course it is, because then we have no excuse to be here and not to be happy, or to be here and to just work for some future, not considering present here and now.
Why did you use the word excuse?
There is one reason I discovered why a person might not allow himself to improve the present situation or to be happy, because seeing others unhappy in the world, one might think that it's not fair for him to be happy when others are disturbed around.
That's an interesting point. Is there another reason?
Excuse? Maybe because also to take responsibility for as a creator of reality. Because there seems to be much less responsibility when you create some future reality. You don't see results, or you don't know what it be. Or
maybe somebody thinks they're not worthy.
Yeah, of course.
I want to translate a summary of that. In my vision last night, I call it a vision. Maybe it was a dream, whatever. The amazing thing about it was that everybody was looking at each other and saying, it doesn't go away. And I didn't really catch, I felt something significant about it, but I didn't understand it until just now. And it's related exactly to this excuse that when one is in such a nice atmosphere, if one thinks one doesn't deserve it, or one thinks it's going to end anyway, or one thinks that, you know, something is wrong, or they're going to have to take a responsibility, or they're going to have to change or something. Usually we make a transformation. We do something within. We make some kind of transformation, and it changes. This is our experience. This is our expectation. Our expectation, and that's very important, is that it is going to stop. We have this feeling for a few moments, and we say, oh, that's so nice, but we know it's going to stop, and it does. That's our expectation. But in this vision last night, all of you were looking at each other and relating with each other and saying, it doesn't stop. That was the amazing point. And then you started talking to each other and relating to each other and having fun in it, laughing and feeling happy about it and not having to worry that it will all be ruined. You felt confident with the energy. You felt it was solid. It was not ephemeral. I think that's the difference, really, between our original energy and our present usage of our energy. Now, there is a lot of discussion, or there has been a lot of discussion, I think this is an ongoing thing historically, about some original position. Call it heaven, call it Vaikuntha, Goloka, call it Nirvana, call it Shambhala, call it I don't know what you would want to call it in any of the different religious traditions of the world. In essence, we're talking about that Garden of Eden where everything was fine until we screwed it up. Now, this is not just some story, because we have practical experience of things going well and we screw it up. We have practical experience of this, and therefore that all of our religious expectations and traditions about how we got here are based on a similar thing. It makes perfect sense. Now let's put aside for a second the idea that it has to be like an Eden or a Vaikuntha or a whatever, that it's some kind of a place which has a name and has a form and all that. Let's just call it an energy and get to some neutral ground with words. And the reason I'm doing this is to clarify completely this issue of where we come from, at least from the conceptual point of view, to make it clear about what we're really talking about, not necessarily that I'm going to come up with answers. So that idea of having come from somewhere, that idea is rooted in our practical experience. For after all, we have all come from somewhere. Where do you come from? Normal question. This is always there. There was a place before that you can trace back as a kind of an origin, even if it's your mother or whatever. There's something that we can go back and trace it to that, well, we used to live there, now we live here. It's a normal way of thinking. So the concept of having come from somewhere is not a bad concept. Let's just understand it in context. Now let's take it energetically. Where has this essence come from? Well, we know very well where it came from. We know that it is part of that supreme. We know it is part of that matrix of existence. We know that we are of that. We know it. We know it, and we're very, very confident of it, because it's something which very, very much corresponds with what we are, with what our experiences are, with what our memories are, what our feelings are. The problem comes when we start to visualize it being a place with all kinds of specific qualities and characteristics. Because then there's all kinds of difficulties dealing with it. Conflicts, problems, disturbances. Why is it happening? Why did I leave there? Why am I here? And so on. But if we just think about it as an energetic situation, it is much easier to deal with all these things and clarify the situation. Now, I am definitely not saying that there is no physical, quote-unquote, manifested, formulated situation. I'm not saying that. But I'm trying to clarify our understanding of that situation then, now, and in the future. So if there is an original situation, it can only be a situation where our energy is unencumbered by the necessity to accept an expectation that it will stop, that it will change, that it will no longer be of the same quality. Now let's take the point of a small child who has no fear of fire until it puts its hand in the fire and feels the pain. It's a similar thing. Up till the point of being burned, there's no expectation that the fire will transform the pleasure or bliss of the present situation into pain and horror. But from that point onwards, that child will feel very, very, very afraid of fire for the rest of the life. The expectation is burned into the cells. So you go from a state of having no such idea to having very deeply that idea with one experience. So that gives us another structure, another model to help us understand original situations and present situations. Now, I know it can be boring to go through these steps one after another. I feel it very interesting because usually people just deal with this whole original location of our spiritual situation and future and present in kind of like big, broad terms. But I want to break it down into possibilities that make absolute sense and then try to make a picture out of it. I think it'll be much more healthy. So you've got a situation where everything is fine. You have no experience of it not being fine. But then you have one experience of it not being fine. And that burns into you the idea that the possibility of it not being fine is absolutely definite. Let's say you are very confident in the situation where everything is fine and in a spiritual atmosphere of no anxiety. And then you have this one experience that it's not fine. Just one experience. Your confidence gets shaken. Now just understand that. That becomes like a cause of paranoia. Paranoia and fear are very similar. Paranoia means it can go wrong. Something can go wrong. That something that's good can change. Something can happen. So this situation where there's nothing to worry about can transform into a situation where, well, wait a minute, there is something to worry about. So if you are in your fully aware kind of situation within the matrix, in other words, your full sensual capacity, your awareness of your consciousness is a very aware situation. When you become aware that there is indeed a possibility that even one thing can go bad, the potential for paranoia is enormous. From this point of view, these concepts of love and fear are very, very significant, much more significant than seen in the normal day-to-day existence. Now the concept becomes at the very basis, at the very bottom of existence. There is love or there is fear, paranoia, the idea that it can go wrong. Something can go bad. Have you ever been together with somebody who's just totally relaxed, doesn't have any paranoia, is completely peaceful, and been together with somebody who's a paranoid? Do you know the difference? If you're together with the peaceful person, even you do something wrong, you say something wrong, you make a movement or you drop something or something happens, they just take it in stride. with a paranoid, if you were to move your hand like this to make a point, they would duck. If you would lift your glass, they would move back. If you would think something, they would get worried. Now just imagine, you're in that state of spiritual essence. You're comfortable, you're relaxed, you don't have fear like that. When you're not in that state, it becomes a distortion in your energy field that is constantly running through your existence, that paranoia. In my vision last night, you as the group realized there's nothing to worry about because this nice freedom from fear and paranoia is not going to stop. Now, paranoia is an incredibly powerful force, and I'm not going to say that it's easy to deal with it, but let's talk about it. You could even define paranoia as that fear that something will go wrong. Now, let's say that one is paranoid and one is worrying all the time. And let's question, does that mean you suffer less or you don't really change things? For example, there's a description astrologically about people with moon, the planet moon in the sign of Cancer. It's stated that people who have moon in Cancer, they are always worrying. And if for some reason there's nothing to worry about, they worry about that. Yeah. Now the question would be, is the worrying helping us or hurting us? Let's say I meet a person for the first time. I'm talking with that him or her for the first time. And I'm always worrying about saying the wrong thing. What usually happens? Well, that means that I'm anxiety, I'm not relaxed, I'm all tense, and I end up saying the exact thing I don't want to say. Because I'm so nervous about what I'm going to say, I say exactly what I don't want to say. Interesting point, that the paranoia and fear creates the very situation that I'm afraid of. So, when you're doing something and you expect loss, and you're always afraid of loss, usually you lose. I'm not talking about when you're externally being very confident and you externally have so many expectations. I'm talking about the deepest down feeling. When you're expecting the loss, you create the situation for losing. You attract the situation for losing. Now, that is also not a small point. That is like a monumentally important point. Now let's just consider it. Does this world, because we speak about this world, the other world, does this world have an inherent power to make everything wrong? In other words, there's the Garden of Eden where everything's right, then we screw it up, and then we get kicked out of the Garden of Eden and the gates are shut, and we're in this other place where everything is wrong all the time. And sometimes okay. Now we have this idea because it's a very easy idea to grasp. It's a very reasonable idea to grasp. There's the over there and there's the over here. Over there all is good. Over here all is generally bad. Therefore you get out of here and go back to there, everything fine. The only problem is that one wonders, if my mind over here is a paranoid, why will it all of a sudden instantly change when I'm over there? Like I got sprinkled with angel dust and poof, it's all gone, my paranoia. And therefore, spiritually we have these concepts where you work real hard and you become completely perfect in all ways and then you go there and you fit right in. Or you just get some mercy and poof, everything is cleared for you. And you fit right in. Now, the difference of this, or let's say the problems with this, are not necessarily the idea or the concepts, because the idea or the concepts are okay. It's just that you've got to get somewhere here to get yourself over there that I worry about. Where people are, for instance, thinking that over here, where we are now, is something to just be neglected, to be rejected, to be thrown away, to be given up, to be walked away from, to get to the other place. I find that's the mistake. Whereas, if one would simply understand that if I was to either get the mercy here or to have created such a situation where I'm no longer such a paranoid and I can just experience it, then what I've got right now is it. However, we like to be together with others who won't interrupt or disturb our feelings or way of seeing things. So back to the original point. If you are right here, right now in this place, even if you accept this place, that kind of a person who's got it all together and is freed from that paranoia, as soon as a paranoid comes to you, you're forced to deal with paranoia again. Just think about it. You're freed from paranoia. A paranoid comes to you. That makes you paranoid. Because here I was, okay. Now this weirdo is coming to me. God ruins everything. So therefore the idea is to get away from the paranoids. So therefore a place where there are no paranoids, there is no fear, is the solution. So they get together in that group, and they have a great time together. Now, the reason why doing it here is so difficult is because the paranoids tend to seek you out. Businessmen would worry that you're not going to buy anything anymore. Government would worry you're not going to pay taxes, or perhaps you're going to try to do something against them. Because after all, fear is the number one way to keep society in control. And can you imagine what the world would be if it didn't run on fear? My God, it would be chaos. All the people who think they have an interest in controlling what you do will then come to this paranoid-less group and want to give it trouble. And even others who just are envious of the fact that you're not paranoid will come up to you and say, oh, you're not paranoid? Well, look, I'm going to give you a real good reason to be paranoid. Therefore, it's a real big problem and difficulty to have such a situation in this Earth planet at this time. But it's a definite fact that in our original, or wrong word original, in our natural condition, we are freed from paranoia. We are freed from fear because this is not part of our essence. But it just takes one paranoid to screw up everything, because it will spread like a disease. What to speak of a world where 99.9% of everybody's a paranoid to one extent or another. Paranoids have a wonderful mantra. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. Just because you're paranoid, just because you are paranoid, does not mean they're not out to get you. In other words, the basis of this world is paranoia. So, therefore, trying to contradict that basis is a losing proposition. Therefore, the non-paranoids have to escape the planet of the paranoids and go to the planet of the non-paranoids. So this planet is the planet of the paranoids. You may have heard of the Planet of the Apes, that science fiction movie. Well, this is the planet of the paranoids. And, you know, maybe even the UFO people are also paranoid. I don't know how paranoid they are, but the planet of the non-paranoids has to be completely separate from the planets of the paranoids. And therefore, because even the paranoids can fly in their UFOs and, you know, find you, therefore it makes perfect theological sense to have a planet of the non-paranoids called Vaikuntha, without paranoia. And it would make sense that that planet has to be in a place where you cannot fly there with a UFO. That would also make sense that that planet would have to be at a place that vibrates at a different frequency so that no paranoia can reach it, even as an energy, projected energy or otherwise. Do we create that place? Absolutely, because it is our agreement, our cooperative effort that is required in the planet of non-paranoia. Do planets of non-paranoia already exist? Absolutely, because there are non-paranoids already existing who are there, who are cooperatively having their place of residence. Is there a Goloka Vrindavan? Absolutely, because there are many non-paranoids who have gotten together to have such a place and who go there and join such a place. Can you go to such a place? Absolutely, because it exists. There are non-paranoids there. If you are in tune as a non-paranoid with those non-paranoids, you can go there. They'll open the door for you. Say, come on. And what kind of a form or personality or quality or whatever will you have when you get there? Well, whatever it is you feel comfortable with. That's all. And why do you not change? Because once you're comfortable, you're comfortable. You wouldn't even think of changing because the thought of change can be born of that paranoia which doesn't exist. You're just happy where you are. Are there other such planets already existing of non-paranoids? Absolutely. Because in the entirety of existence, there's a whole variety of non-paranoids who have gotten other places of non-paranoia together. There's all kinds of these locations in all different places. You want to connect to any one of them? Go right ahead. You want to create together a new one? Go right ahead. The idea of this having the capacity is inherent within our existence, to get together with others who we feel comfortable with. This is natural. Can you do that here? Can you do that now? Yes, but finding non-paranoids who are similar to you in a non-paranoid way, who can deal with reality that we have here, given to us, not which we have kind of created, is very rare. And even when you create such a grouping, there'll always be the other paranoids out there who don't like what you're doing and think there's something wrong and they want to come in and make you paranoid. And here is a fun point. It is known in sports, in war, that the best defense is a good offense. When you're like playing football, when you're always pushing up against the goal of the other side, you don't have to worry all that much about your own defense because the others have to defend themselves against you and they're all in a defensive mode. So your forwards and halfbacks are just pounding the goal of the other guy and your goalie's sitting there picking his teeth, having nothing to do. And the other guys are just going, look out, and oh, here they come, and stop it there, and go and but you can't relax. That's not a way to relax in your non-paranoia. It's just like you've got to push out your non-paranoia. You've got to propagate it. You've got to preach it. So the idea is you go out and you preach your non-paranoia, and in this way you push away the paranoids. But paranoids are much more than non-paranoids, so therefore they always manage to go around the other side of your offense and get you here and get you there, and then you become paranoid, and then you fall apart. And therefore, this concept of how to avoid the paranoids is not a very complete concept. It's okay. It works sometimes, for some time, but it's not very complete. So a great way to deal with that is everybody moves to some farm far away from the city, far away from the paranoids, and lives peacefully with animals and no dependence on things and self-sufficiently. Don't get me wrong. These are great ideas. I am not criticizing these ideas as being bad. They are natural, logical conclusions of the way people are, of the way we think. But each of them have as many problems as they are trying to solve. After all, how do you take city people who are accustomed to the way of life in the cities or in modern society and put them back in primitive times? It's very, very difficult unless you really struggle to do it. And you really have to be addicted to hard work, addicted to simplicity. And you really have to be non-paranoid in it, because if you do that as a paranoid way of avoiding difficulties, you're going to still bring your paranoia with you, which will create difficulties. And if you have tendencies towards boredom and you go to such a simple life, that boredom that you feel will start to strangle you, and you'll start creating situations within the farm which will be scandalous or cause disturbance. So the person who has experience just sits back and says, there's no hope, it's impossible, this place is a place of suffering, this place is horrible, get me out of here as fast as I can. That's a natural, logical, perfectly intelligent conclusion. But thinking people then say, well, to get from here to there with that mentality contradicts the very thing you're trying to do. Because that's the mentality of a paranoid, and paranoids are not allowed into the non-paranoid's realm. It's not like when you arrive at the gates of Vaikuntha, you can show your philosophical, idealistic card and say, I have philosophical ideals that are similar or exactly the same as your philosophical ideals, if such a thing could be said. Therefore, I can get into those gates. The non-paranoids are not stupid. They have guards there at those gates. They know the only thing keeping us from getting screwed up again is that we have no paranoids in here, you see? So we got guards. And the guards aren't going to look at your card. They're not going to look at your certificate of graduation. They're going to look, well, are you a paranoid or not? And one of the most amazing qualities of a non-paranoid is they can immediately smell paranoia. Even the faintest odor of paranoia stinks to them. So you come with all kinds of qualifications. They say, forget it. And their whole realm is covered with all kinds of protection, armor of various kinds, energetic armor, every kind of armor. You just can't get through it. You can forget it. It's not going to happen. And therefore, people say, all right, being a paranoid's not going to get us anywhere. Therefore, right now, right here, right in this place, we will be non-paranoid. And we will create that group of non-paranoids right here, right now. And we will shift ourselves one after another, you know, according to bodily death, to the other place of non-paranoia, which is much more permanent. And in this way, we can see a complete picture of this, of realms of existence. And we can understand it's a question of a balancing act, of moving in and out of these states continuously. Because even you can try to have a little group or a bigger group of non-paranoids, there'll always be the paranoids coming in and causing you trouble. So you have to move in and out of the state of non-paranoia to dealing with paranoids. And in this way, you strengthen yourself, you strengthen your capacities, you strengthen your energy. So it becomes a combination of being in the non-paranoid state here, dealing with the paranoid state here, but just keeping that balance, and at the point of death, embracing the non-paranoid state totally and moving into the non-paranoid domain with relief. Finally, thank you. So all of the religious systems, all of the religious traditions, any kind of spiritual tradition that is dealing with this in a very, shall we say, comprehensive and even successful manner, are fine. But to that degree, these systems bring into it paranoia. To that degree, they defeat their own purposes. The idea, if you do not do like this, you will go to hell, will destroy any possibility of getting to that non-paranoid state. The real way to say it is, if you act like this, which is against your own self-interest, you're just going to not be very successful. You're going to remain in your paranoid state. The idea that this is that person's bad, this thing's bad, that's bad, avoid them, avoid them. And if they come close to you, run in the opposite direction. Not going to help you very much because you're going to be filled with paranoia. There's one of them. And it's one of the qualities of paranoia that when you want to be a victim like that, a victim of the paranoid has fun victimizing you. Okay, the idea is that all of these ideas are important. All of these ideas are clarifying. All of these religious concepts are clarifying, important. There's good things in all of it. The problem is that you will never, it is not possible to create a perfect situation in this realm where there's a mixture of paranoids and non-paranoids. All you can do is the best you can. Nothing more. Be the best person you can. Do the best you can. Try to get together with the best persons you know and deal with them in the best way you can. Just do the best you can. You can do nothing else. And don't give up. Don't let paranoia kill you. If you have problems, get up and continue. Okay, you blew it. Fine. Whatever. Just go on and keep trying to balance things in the best way you can because you're strengthening yourself to that point to where you can be within that non-paranoid state in a permanent way. And don't feel, of course, this is my opinion now. I'm going to contradict certain traditions, but don't feel that you have to end up in a certain way. If you feel comfortable going in a certain way, fine. If you don't feel fully 100% comfortable with it, then don't feel you have to be there. After all, the goal is not to get somewhere specific. The goal is to get to that where you're in your natural situation, feeling comfortable together with others who are similar, who are non-paranoid, who are happy like you. Let it be what it is for you. Let it become what it will be for you. Let it grow. Just go on step by step, day by day, moment by moment, and let it all manifest. Without demands, without expectations, without fear, without paranoia. And I think this was a great topic for today. And it was exactly according to my vision last night that I had forgotten all about until I heard this topic. It's funny, every week I get letters from people who say, you know, you talked about exactly that theme that I wanted to talk about. And it's funny, you know, you're talking about things, it's almost as if we're connected. I get this all the time. Of course we're connected. We have this feeling of comfort together. We're comfortable with each other. That's our connection. We're not comfortable with each other because we all believe something. We're comfortable with each other because we just feel good about it. And we feel good about it because, you know why? Because we are connected and we're feeding off of each other's comforts and we're just sharing with each other's energies. My enormous lamentation is that we don't all speak the same language because this dealing with Maha as a translation is driving me crazy. Just like in the beginning of this discussion, it was me and Maha talking with each other. You have no idea how good that made me feel. But he had to stop and translate. Oh God, what a drag. It would be so cool if we could just all talk like this over the internet. Just have this big worldwide talk about each of us, how we feel and all this. It would be just so nice. But we can't. So we do it energetically each week. So energetically each week we hold each other energetically. We relate with each other energetically. And we are therefore a group of people who are just sharing like that. And we just have to deal with this horror of multi-languages all over the world. Yet at the same time, our energy all speaks the same language. That's why we're connected. And the wonder of all this is that we're not followers of anybody. We're not followers of anything. We don't even have some rules. We don't have standards. We don't have regulations. We don't have a structure. We just are connected. You don't have to worry about pleasing me. I don't have to worry about pleasing you. Whether you go out and do something what other persons might think are crazy doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you eat, what you don't eat, what you say, what you don't say, who you meet, what you do with them. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter what you don't believe. You don't have to have any allegiance. You don't have to accept anything. It just is. Do you realize what this means? This means this is freedom from paranoia. There are no demands and no expectations in this association. You just accept the connections that we have, that's all. And you let the energy flow to whatever degree you feel comfortable with. And I think that's what that vision was last night. That was the meaning of that vision, that there is nothing to fear and it's not going to stop. What can one of the paranoids tell us that would make us change our minds? They could say something about me. Okay, fine. They already have. I mean, I can't even imagine what more they could say. If it's true or it's not true, who cares? They can tell me about you. I don't care. I remember the first time I had that experience. Somebody was in our house and they came and, you know, a former disciple, a friend. And he came up to me and he said, you know, I had fish. Say it again. I'm sorry. I was laughing. Just the last part. And I was like, wow, like, why are you telling me this? I don't understand. But I didn't say that. So I said, well, how was it? And he said, well, it wasn't so bad. And I kind of went inside, oh, yuck. But it didn't bother me at all. I didn't at all care whether this person ate fish or not. I knew. I mean, for me, fish, oh, yuck. I can't even imagine it. But, hey, it didn't bother me. I didn't care. It didn't create the slightest paranoia or anxiety in me that a fish eater was in my house. I mean, I know it's wild. I know it's such a silly thing to talk about. But, you know, it really doesn't matter. None of these things matter because it's your life. You have to deal with whatever it is you're dealing with. I have no judgment on you. You should have no judgment on me. We should have no judgment on each other. We're all just living as we feel is right because that's all we can do. And our energy is like that. We are just connected without the worrying of these external things. We are only connected on the energy of our interest. That is love. You love somebody regardless of what they are, what they do, how they manifest in their own eccentric manner. You love them for what they are. And as soon as you start putting conditions on that love, I love you if, and not, there's not love. It's paranoia. I'll love you, but if you eat fish, whoa, I can't love you. It's a very strange mentality. But anyway, I didn't mean to talk about that, but what I'm just really saying is that trying to just explain a little bit about the beauty of our association, that it just, you can embrace anybody who feels comfortable in this association, regardless of what they are, regardless of what they do, regardless of what they think, even what groups they belong to. When there is this feeling of unity, it is just there and nothing can disturb it. Okay, anyway, I'll just leave it at that. And we'll take a break now until 30 minutes after the hour, half hour after. I've already got a lot of questions. I mean, when I brought up this point about us feeling connected, I got a lot of pop-ups on my screen that people feel the same way. So I know it's true. And you can ask what you like if you like. I mean, go right ahead. I mean, I would love it that we could all just talk together in the same language. That's not possible. So this time-consuming translation process has to continue. Anything you want to add?
I just wonder about this conception of kingdom of God.
Wait a minute, somehow. Yeah. Yes, go ahead. Anything you want to add?
I wonder about this conception of kingdom of God on earth and this dissension conception.
Dissension. What do you mean by dissension? Dissension, D-I-S-S or D-E-S-C?
Spiritual energy is descending on earth nowadays. We are part of that process.
Why does it have to descend? Why can't it just... What do you mean by descend? Descend means there's up and there's down and up comes down.
Or maybe just manifesting.
Okay, and so like, where would that energy come from?
Does it make spiritual process any different in key principles? That we don't have to wait for death, just we can do something now? Something.
Well, let's go back to... do you think that this energy is coming down from up, and therefore our interaction with it is to accept what comes and deal with it? Or do you think that people are becoming more aware and drawing it to them?
I feel that both processes are there.
Okay. So what? How do you feel it manifesting?
I feel the change of energy field around. It becomes more dense, more like what would you describe this this creamish white energy, and people, the all in all energetic level is much more. How I feel.
And why?
Probably because some people they. Arrange it by their power, or maybe it's some energy from space, which is planetary influence or something, I don't know.
Do you remember what we talked about, this energy around the world that is descending, like another kind of a matrix, a form of spiritual manifestation, which is being imprinted on the planet, that EAP thing? So that's a combination of a overall plan, an overall concept, an overall structure that is being drawn into place. It was there, it was available, and it's being drawn into place. So it's a combination of the outside, the inside, together, working together to draw it into place. That also goes in relationship to this question which came from there about people collecting energy and then spending it. For example, a Kshatriya or a Brahmana, I suppose Kshatriyas would do it in terms of financial things and then spend in taxes, and Brahmanas in terms of knowledge and then give it. So what this would be the energy is coming from outside. It is being absorbed by those who are receptive to it, who want it, who draw it into them. And then by bringing that matrix into existence, they are including so many people within it. So this way the energy is being spent by sharing it amongst different people. After all, anybody who receives some gift of a spiritual energy, when they are therefore increasing their own energy and capacity, one of the natures of that spiritual energy is to share it with others. And by sharing it with others like that, it expands the potency of the spiritual realm. In other words, that which you put out has such an enormous effect that just flows. This is an interesting question which relates to the issue that ignorance is bliss. 'Tis folly to be wise, for ignorance is bliss. That persons who don't know anything about karma just do what they feel is right, but have a good heart, as opposed to those who have some ideas about karma and are very afraid of it and paranoid. How would that work in the sense of their success? In other words, isn't it possible that somebody who's very aware of karma and things like that could have their pure feelings, their heart, their love, harmed by that? Let's take it from the point of view of the ignorance is bliss. For those who have no understanding about some reactions. They may feel happy. They may get some reactions, may not consider it so badly. Those who think everything is a reaction and they're suffering because of all the things, they're very afraid to do anything. They repress all their desires and everything. Neither of them are really full of knowledge. Even you know something about karma, but you act like that. Both of them are ignorant. Neither of them are blissful. Somebody with a good heart who's not very philosophical doesn't have to have big philosophy. They just go out and do what love would do. They would react according to how their love feels to react. And that is a rather good position to be in. But love should not be blind. You know, you have then another situation which goes beyond these states, which is that one has to be aware of action and reaction. One has to be aware of consequences. One has to be aware that when I act in a certain way, this kind of a result will come. And therefore, there are sciences in this world to do things better, like is being asked. For example, feng shui, how to arrange things in one's life to make the energies optimized so that the potential for doing things comfortably with love and in a good way can be maximized. So that is a question of doing things properly according to the nature around one. It's knowledge, and therefore the results one gets will be better. And when you do things better, you avoid the results that come when you do things in an improper way. Other kinds of things also was asked about astrology. For example, doing things at the right time, or knowing when energy is going your favor in a favorable way to go with that energy rather than going against it. Paranoids who think things come from like karmic reactions get stuck, they get frozen, they get full of fear, they don't want to act, or they become repressed because they're afraid to act. But those trying to do the best thing they can do, they know, okay, I've got this strange situation here right now, whatever reason I'm in this situation, I have to deal with it and move forward. They may even understand why they're in the situation, which is very helpful for clearing it up. Therefore, from that point of view, knowledge burns up reactions, because when you have knowledge and you understand cause and effect, you can neutralize things. For example, if you have a disease, you can give it some treatment. Or if you have a problem with the economy, you can do some corrections. In other words, by having knowledge, you can adjust negative effects. And therefore, having spiritual kind of a knowledge can help one deal properly with negative effects that are coming from acting not in a spiritual way, from not acting from the platform of love. I have another question here about how, when one is feeling that something negative is going to happen, one has a feeling of foreboding, a feeling of disaster, a feeling like that. Is it that one is predicting it's going to happen, having a premonition that it's going to happen, or one is creating that it's going to happen? Let me give an example, which I'm sure will give an immediate understanding of this issue. Just like when it's about to have a huge thunderstorm. Now, the storm hasn't come yet, but all these black clouds come over, and the whole atmosphere feels very heavy and dense. You know there's going to be all hell breaking loose in the sky soon. Now, you are feeling, you are perceiving what is there. You're not creating that. You didn't make the clouds come. But you are a sensitive being. And certain situations mean certain things. You're a sensitive and intelligent being. So your sensitivity gives you a feeling. Your feeling is associated with events that take place. So therefore, you can predict it's going to rain. It's going to wind. There's going to be lightning and thunder. Now, similarly, if you're in association with people who have a very bad feeling about you and could want to harm you, you will feel that. That is something which is there as your sensitivity, which will also help to protect you. Now, some persons have the capacity to feel energies when they are in a very subtle state, even when they're very far away in a very subtle state. They can feel things assembling. They can see energies assembling into what will probably be a certain final format, and therefore they can say, probably this will happen. So they are feeling a little of this, a little of that, a little of this, a little of that. Their sensitivity has this perception, and their intelligence assembles it into an image of how that will manifest. Just like you can look at a little plant and then feel how it'll manifest as a tree if you have some experience. So that's one method by which a sensitive person can reach out into the future and give some understanding. Let's say you're going to have some crystal ball, or you're going to have some medium by which an image may appear. What you're really doing is assembling energies or reaching out to energies all around and just asking them to come, or inviting them to come, or even inducing them or pulling them to come to manifest an understanding of how it will play out in the future. Now, some people are consciously aware of what they're doing, and other people, that's just so much part of their nature. Their energy just does it automatically from lifetime after lifetime of development, or even in this life. They don't even think about the process, but they get to the same point. Here's a question which I'm not exactly sure about the... Anyway, I'll just talk about it. You know, you hear a lot about Atlantis. Let's put it this way. You hear a lot about previously advanced civilizations on this planet. The two most talked about in the esoteric fields are Atlantis and Lemuria. Atlantis in the Atlantic and Lemuria in the Pacific. You hear the same kind of a thing in the Vedic understanding of previously advanced civilizations, and also the land mass being more together, whereas these continents which have now drifted apart were in one piece. There were land masses that fell within the ocean, splits, drifts took place. Instead of the ocean being around, it split apart. And then you hear about how people from Atlantis had gone through stages of development. Finally, the thing collapsed. Some of them went to Egypt. The Egyptian civilization developed from that, and so on. And sometimes you have feelings that you know people. Sometimes you have feelings that you're related to people. Sometimes you have feelings of having done things in another atmosphere scientifically or spiritually, or healing things or special things. You get some feeling of it and you can relate it back to that time. Now, one may think that, well, we've been here so long through all of that. That's many, who knows how many millions, if it was, so many, how long ago that was. That means we've been here a long time, and therefore one might tend to think that this would infer we shall stay here a long time. But then again, it can also mean that we should send ourselves to another situation where we'll be freed from this paranoia. One could think like that, or one could even say that, well, maybe I had great advancement in the past and I've chosen to enter into this time because it's special. Or it could be a combination of all of this. Having a history does not mean that the history has to continuously be in a certain way. Our capacity to decide who we wish to be with, where we wish to be with them, still remains. It is not changed by a history. After all, those who are very aware of Atlantean history know very well where everything went wrong, how everything went wrong, and how it deteriorated. And it makes perfect sense that this highly scientifically evolved kind of a situation would go bad when the heart was lost. Again, the heart-mind connection. The destruction of Atlantis came when the heart-mind connection was lost. It became more mind, less heart. If you think about the UFO kind of people, you mainly consider them in terms of mind. Highly technically advanced, great mental capacities, telepathy, capacities to do all kinds of things which are beyond our ability and belief. You don't really hear about the heart of such personalities. There seems to be a connection between the evolution of learning how to manipulate nature through a technology, a science of any kind, and gaining control over things, and a disassociation from the heart, from the things which make life essentially what it is. And historically, it is always this lack of connection between heart and mind which has caused destruction of civilizations, which has caused catastrophes, which has caused disturbances. The perfect example is right now the ecological disaster, which is our planet today. It's a perfect example of this. In our march to, I suppose, simultaneously make money by making life easier or more pleasurable in the minds of those who do it, but always make money is number one. We have ruined the atmosphere to such an extent that this raising of temperature is compromising the very stability of our planet. Now, raising temperature is causing sea level to shift and rise and change, and that the flooding and the increase of water levels is not any longer considered to be an esoteric or religious idea. It is now hard, verifiable science. And the solution is not the mind. The solution is the heart. For example, the mind can think what it wants, but until the heart gets involved, the money factor will refuse to change the situation. Whereas the heart factor would say, well, you know, our children, our grandchildren, their grandchildren are going to live in a hellish place because of our decisions. And just money is not enough to justify the destruction of future generations' capacity or quality of life. So heart would say, now it stops. Now we have to immediately do things to limit the destruction, because you can't stop it. But that doesn't happen because greed and the desire to control and paranoia lives in the mind and thinks of excuses to keep things the way they are, or to try to make some adjustments, or to pretend like you're making adjustments. And in this way in which people function, in this interaction between heart and mind, and the failure of the heart to rule the mind in this sense, and when it needs to, the failure of the interaction, the cooperative integration of heart and mind, has been the key for the destruction of these major civilizations in the past, and it is the key at the present. So that's food for thought. Here's an interesting question. Why aren't people happy with what they have? Because you see what you can get, you get it, and you get the fulfillment of your desires. Why aren't you happy with that? Well, I suppose the answer to that would be the basis upon which all spirituality is sitting, the foundation of all spirituality. And by not feeling comfortable within, one has to seek out comfort outside, and as soon as one seeks out comfort outside, one will never be satisfied. Because all things outside are based in some format which relates with our physical vehicles or our mental vehicles or whatever, not our essence. All the things outside are not of our essence, so we want to bring more and more of them in, and they get consumed rapidly, and we are just not satisfied because they don't last. But spiritual disciplines are meant to bring us to the point by which we feel within, we live within. Our fundamental relationship begins from within and reaches out to embrace it as part of our spiritual existence. That is the only way to be satisfied with our lives. I think that answers that question. Here's an interesting question about paranoia. Kamsa, if you remember Kamsa, when he was driving his sister and brother-in-law in the chariot after their marriage, the oracle, the prediction came from the sky, "You fool, you don't know that the child of this couple, the child of your sister, is going to kill you." And the question is that, is it not that Kamsa actually created his death? Because if he wasn't paranoid, there wouldn't have been reason for him to be killed. But that was the whole point of the prediction, to make him paranoid so that he would do stupid things, so he would be killed. That was the whole point of it. That's why paranoia is dangerous, because others can feed your paranoia to control you, to destroy you. In that situation, Kamsa had no reason to be paranoid. Why should he be worried about his sister? What did he care? He's powerful. But the idea was to get him killed. The idea was to make events take place. So the prediction came just to make him paranoid, just so that all this would be catalyzed. You know, these personalities who are useful in the development of events, they're special. They're not ordinary. You know, the idea of this paranoia, the idea of this being used by God, the idea of, it's not like there is this God up there who just manipulates people and kicks them around like marbles. Everybody is gaining from it. Everybody gets from it, and everybody is agreeing to it. There's voluntarily an acceptance of these roles and positions, even though we may not understand it.